Okay, it is Wednesday, August 12th, 2016, at 6:30 p.m. I call to order the Board of Ethics regular meeting. My name is Joe Atkinson. I'm chair. Go ahead.
Bill Sims, chairman of Vice.
Linda Batway.
Tony Warfield.
Martha Lance Staff.
George Storm, city clerk.
You said on the record, Joe, I think you said August 12th.
October 12th.
Oh, it is. Says August 12th on the meeting.
Oh, shoot.
Did I read that off the...
Yes, you did.
Oh, jeez.
Did I grab the right one? Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay, we will note the change to...
I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, I didn't even see that. I just heard it. I'm like, what?
Anyway, people proofed it.
Boy, I could use the extra month.
Sorry about that.
Okay, we will make that change to October 12th.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you all for the introductions. First agenda item is approval of the May 2nd, 2016 minutes. I was able to glance over those. Does anybody have any changes or any discussion on those? And if you all want to take a few moments to read, then no problem. So,
yeah, you better read her. I can't get the date right. I don't know what the minutes look like.
So when we were looking with the complaint, we went into closed session.
You're absolutely right.
And asked everybody to leave, but it doesn't say we asked everybody to come back.
So I was going to include, what I need to do is add the times.
And do we maintain a list of people who attend? Was there a sign-in sheet?
But I wouldn't necessarily include those in the minutes. The only thing, not people who attend, because there's no real responsibility. I mean, there's no authority or that they have to sign in. Mm. So
okay,
typically we don't.
Yeah, but if they speak before the board, then I would try and include those people that spoke before the board. Okay. But you're absolutely right. I can add the time for the closed session.
And when they came back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then some of them did have a few words, and we don't have that in there now. In the future, maybe, if we do have an audience, we could further discuss that.
Okay.
And include that in a little bit more. That was kind of a different situation. So I'm fine simply, and good point, Bill, adding the times in there that we went to closed session, and then adding the time in there that we exited closed session.
I very much appreciate the language that keeps saying if the facts are presumed true. I think that's very helpful to have it stated that way. Thank you. It was only 8:05.
I know.
It seemed a lot later.
Is there any more discussion, or do we need a few more minutes to read? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes with a, and are you going to add that change in later then?
Yeah.
Have me sign it later?
Yes.
Is that how it works?
Yes.
Okay.
I will add the close when the closed session began and when you guys came out in closed session.
Okay. So do we have a motion to approve the minutes with that those two changes?
Sure. So moved.
Okay, Linda, do we have a second?
One second.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Passed unanimous. On to our next agenda item. We have a proposal to propose a change to the city code, a minor change. Martha, do you want to... educate us on exactly what this will do?
Sure. In your packet, there's two things. One is, right behind the minutes, is a two-page, well, it's two double-sided pages that just says proposed amendment at the top. And then behind it is another page that I put together, and I'll tell you how they relate. But that page just has excerpts from the Code of Ethics. It has the definition section and then the prohibited conduct section. So starting with the proposed amendment piece, that's what Joe, the chair, put together to get the discussion started, that to consider adding a clarification type of amendment to the Code of Ethics to indicate that if there is a potential financial conflict of interest involving a member of someone's immediate family, that person, if they're only... relationship to the transaction, the contracted issue, was that the member of the immediate family was on the board of a nonprofit or was a non-salaried officer of the nonprofit, that too would fall under the carve-out for remote interest, mm-hmm. which wouldn't be a conflict. So that was the plan. What I went ahead and did then after... reading that, and I'm sorry that I didn't get it done sooner, that we could have put it in your packets to look at, but I did a little bit more on that following on the discussion that we had last time. And what I would propose to do is, if you look at the second page there, under prohibited conduct, I made some changes to the definition of remote interest. Not substantively, except for to add the immediate family member. But I thought, since you were contemplating amending it anyway, because this is written so full of legalese and kind of, you know, ponderously, I thought if you were going to take the chance, the opportunity to make the case to amend it, that it might make sense to just reword it so it was much more clear. So what I proposed is to capture the amendment. We wouldn't make any changes to the top part, but then for the definition of remote interest, for purposes of this section, a remote interest will apply only if the city officer or employee or the city officer or an immediate family member, oops, sorry, I did that wrong. I put two city officers. I should have double-checked my own work. The city officer or employee or an immediate family member of the city officer or employee is a non-salaried officer of a nonprofit corporation, which is the contracting party. So really just trying to rewrite that sentence so it's not backwards, but rather reads like a normal person would write or talk. And then adding in the immediate family member to the exception. And then for 2, 3, and 4, I propose the same type of changes, just to say more clearly that a remote interest will be found when the city officer or employee is an employee or agent of the contracting party. Same with 3 and 4, just to really try to use plain language. When we use the term immediate family, we had a discussion last time that immediate family is defined in the code already, and it referenced back to a section of the city's personnel code, which, when we found that definition, was pretty broad. It said immediate family means spouses, dependents, anyone residing in the person's household, and anyone within the third degree of consanguinity of the person or the person's spouse, within 3 degrees of relationship, by blood or by marriage, which doesn't, make any sense for these purposes, I didn't think. I thought if we were talking about the possibility of even having financial interest directly or indirectly to begin with, it's pretty unlikely that it's going to be spread out
your
to those degrees. So I pulled it back in to suggest that we define immediate family as meaning the spouse or domestic partner, dependent children, and other dependent relatives if living in the household. And that definition I took word for word from the state law that is the code of ethics for state officers, state agency employees. So that would be my suggestion, is add the immediate family, define it, clean up the wording so it's just easier to understand and makes more sense, and move that forward. If your inclination, if you agree that you want to move forward this amendment in the first place, mm-hmm. that would be my recommendation, mm-hmm. is that we take the time and opportunity to try to make it more clear.
Yeah, but then we'd be working on two amendments, the immediate family, and if we did change the definition of that, it would change immediate family for every other city contract, right?
Because
that's how it's defined.
No, it wouldn't, because if we only define it in this particular...
For this document,
for this section of municipal code, it's limited to that.
Oh, okay. So we would define it in our section.
Right.
And we would not
We wouldn't change it in where it appears anywhere else. Although it's funny that it's in the personnel code at all, because I think it must have been in there for a reason a long time ago.
Yeah.
Maybe when we had, different rules or nepotism and things like that, because I don't see any reference in the section of the personnel code. They don't use that term after they define it. But I don't want to mess around with the personnel code. If you change it here and leave it here only inside the code of ethics, it doesn't impact other sections of the municipal code.
Yeah.
I guess my concern is that talking about dependent children and relatives.
Mm.
I think an adult child, I would, if my adult son were getting a contract that I was helping to facilitate, it would seem to me to have potential for conflict of interest too.
But to even get into it at all, you first have to have the threshold of, do you have an indirect or direct financial interest? So that would only be a problem if there was some reason, if your adult child was somehow... there was something about the contractual relationship that your adult child had with the city that would give you financial benefit. So if you supported that child or that child supported you. So
uh-huh.
So I mean,
what you're saying is that if I helped a contract happen for my adult child, but I wasn't getting any financial benefit out of it, it doesn't count.
Right, it's not a problem at all. You wouldn't have to even get to the exception because we didn't trigger the problem.
Now, I'd be a little worried about changing the definition of immediate family, and that the way that we changed it, then you could, under the ethics code, contract or approve contracts for cousins. I would leave that if that causes an issue to other folks to change it. I think definition that we're talking about, and then in the remote interest section, simply is a non-financial interest. We're not changing in a big way any real serious consequences. Like a remote interest is a non-financial interest, and usually any kind of violation of that may even be an oversight where somebody didn't think that they have a conflict here, they should recuse yourself. Themselves, but I'm a little worried to change it in the ethics code, and that it would apply to the definition of our whole ethics code, including. Say again.
Oh, there's no other. The term immediate family isn't used anywhere else in the code of ethics.
Yeah.
So it only would apply right here. So, and I guess just to back up a little bit, a remote interest still is a financial interest. Like we were just saying, that to even trigger this section of the Code of Ethics in the first place, you have to have a financial interest. There has to be a direct or indirect financial interest. So that is the problem. But then this remote interest is then saying, we recognize that there's a financial interest, but certain types of financial interest are remote enough that that the result is that they'll be found not to cause a conflict of interest. So, I mean, it's kind of, I don't mean to sound nitpicky, Joe, but it's a little bit of a distinction, because you're not saying that there's not a financial interest at all. You're saying there is one, but it's a type of one that we're willing to, you know, overlook or accept.
And the only difference is you have to report it, correct?
Correct.
So if you have one of these, you have to report it.
If you have one and you report it, then it's not a problem.
And you can't vote on it either.
Yeah, you're not supposed to vote on it.
Right.
Yeah, and the one that we're adding in is a non-financial interest. There are remote interests, you know, 3, 4, and 5 that are really limited financial interests.
Right.
Under that, so...
Right,
but we're changing the definition, though, of family member, immediate family member in the whole code of ethics. So you're saying that only applies to this one section, because we're not changing the beneficial interests of contracts prohibited. No city officer or employee shall participate. Skipping, if they have a financial interest, a financial interest, direct or indirect, within the meaning of Section 6.6 of the Charter of the City of Tacoma. So those are direct financial interests. Those are a little bit separate from remote interests. I hope I'm not confusing people. But if we change the definition of family member, doesn't it change the definition for that as well, where there is a more direct financial
interest? Because it never says immediate family in that.
Yeah.
So you're not changing anything.
Okay.
Right. Right. The only term immediate family member I think it appears also with gifts maybe. I don't think so. It's not in our code anymore. I think that the definition of immediate family member was an artifact, because the code was updated, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And before that, I think it had a more elaborate definition of gifts that talked about gifts to your immediate family member, and then when those got taken out, I think the definition just stayed in.
For basically just right here?
Yeah, but it wasn't for anything, because until we write in this amendment, it was really defining nothing. But, so the term immediate family member isn't used elsewhere in the Code of Ethics, so adding, you know, messing with this definition doesn't do anything other than address the square on the issue that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But, you know, if what you're trying to say is we recognize that there might be a financial interest here, that by virtue of, you know, being close to someone, being married to them or having them in your household or having them be your child, if you know, you participate in a contract that they're involved with, that could cause some kind of, you know, financial, direct or indirect financial interest to you. So I think we are saying that this is one more type of remote interest, because if there was no crossover, if there was nothing that the family member stood to gain that could then be imputed to the city officer or employee, then I don't, you know, there wouldn't be a problem to be addressed in the first place. At least that's how I'm seeing it.
Okay.
But I don't mean to, you know, direct the conversation, Joe, because I know that you were concerned with a particular situation that we had with a particular case, where the situation was that the council member's spouse was on the board of a nonprofit, and that particular nonprofit was awarded funds from the city, and that council member did not recuse and did not call it out, voted on it. And there was the possibility that some benefit could then accrue to the council member's spouse and then in turn indirectly to the council member. So I think it was a financial interest. It just wasn't one that was clearly defined and in that particular case what couldn't be found was that there truly was a financial interest. So I think that was, you know, the reason why it there wasn't a violation found. But that in turn led to this discussion of, oh, well, that's the same type of situation as if the council member themselves were the member of the nonprofit board. Shouldn't we call that out and be clear? So that's my recollection of, mm-hmm. of why you know there was some desire to address this.
Mm-hmm. So because the council member in this case, if we had an adult child of that person, the thought is that they aren't going to be commingling their monies, so that's why it's mm-hmm. not.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah. Whereas, like a spouse or a domestic partner, dependent child, if the dependent child makes money, it goes back into the household.
Right.
Dependent relative, same. I think that's, you know, like I said, I took this definition from the state law, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's my understanding of the reasoning is the relationship is close enough and of a circumstance that there would be financial commingling. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's no conflict because there's no financial interest, even an indirect one.
This is very indirect financially because it's a non-salaried officer, right?
Right.
So it's like even
right.
less right. financial. Well, I think the thought would be
I just have that feeling that if you have an adult child who's president of the board of this group and you're
mm-hmm.
not saying that
mm-hmm.
in a public way, that feels like.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a financial interest, I think folks would be concerned about undue influence.
Well, that would be different. I mean, that's like the...
It's kind of the same, but that's defined more seriously, of course. But this is the same thing pretty much in that, you know, if we all are on this board and we have a friend who... Or, I'm sorry, a wife or a husband or a son or daughter that's on the council and they decide to give us a bunch of money to take a trip somewhere... Or they sponsor an amendment to the budget that gives a bunch of money to this commission because we're on it, possibly. We want to just eliminate that possibility,
exactly.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, the undue influence, Linda, is beneficial interest in legislation. That improper use of position. I'm sorry, that's what I was looking for. No city officer or employee shall knowingly use their officer position to secure personal benefit, gain, or profit, or use their position to secure special privileges or exceptions for himself, herself, or for the benefit, gain, or profit of other persons. So if you're, taking some action that would benefit your spouse's or your adult child's business or, you know, pet charity or something like that,
mm-hmm.
probably would be covered under
that.
Yeah, and then just in terms of, you know, just the optics of it, there's other ways that these kinds of things get called out. And people recuse themselves all the time, not because they find themselves embroiled in, you know, doing this analysis, but because, just like you said, it doesn't feel...
Didn't look right.
Didn't look right. And, you know, I need to disclose. But the legal prohibitions are in the Code of Ethics... As well as if they're acting like in a judicial sort of capacity, like if they're having a hearing on a planning thing or hearing a purchasing protest or something like that, the something called the appearance of fairness doctrine would apply, and that means just that if the relationship is such that there's some reason why. It looks funny that you should be sitting in judgment over that matter.
You should be recusing.
Yeah, you should call it out and recuse yourself. And then, there's just general, like I was saying, just the general optics of it. But the Code of Ethics, at least so far, only addresses true, you know, pecuniary financial conflicts of interest. As well as all these other things, the undue influence and the improper use of position.
And if you had a family member who is a salaried member and has a direct financial interest, that is covered in another section of our ethics code. So we are simply adding that to a situation
only
where...
Only to the remote interest.
In this case, the change that we're making is just a remote, non-financial interest. But... it's a not the most serious thing when somebody makes a mistake like that, but if you have a family member or a spouse who's on a board, you shouldn't be proposing and sponsoring amendments to, you know, if they're on that commission, to give a bunch of money to it, basically. Because that could, in the future, benefit that person. There's a lot of kind of ifs that, you know, we can't and don't want to cover. But
right.
So I think it's a good amendment, and I think it's simple. And I got a chance to read the changes, and I think one of the things you did, of course, as you mentioned, was add city officer, just to clarify it. So you think that's necessary, Martha? Because the old language simply just says that of a, and it doesn't say anything.
Yeah, well,
now it says that of a city officer, because, which defines it a little more narrowly,
well,
right?
Well, city officer employee is the language that's used throughout to define the people that are subject to the code. Mm-hmm. So that would cover both electeds as well as city employees, as well as you all, your city officers at this point. And again, the reason that I did that was an attempt to make it just read more like normal
it reads
people talk.
Much better.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for that.
It links to the paragraph above.
Uh-huh.
Very well.
Uh-huh. So that
I think it's a good change.
Those aren't substantive changes. They weren't intended to be. They were just intended to say, hey, if we're going in there anyway, let's take this opportunity. Because every time we deal with that section, every group I've worked with that's come, you know, it just sounds so funny. That.
Yeah.
And you always have to stop and draw a little picture as to
yes.
Who's that? Who are we talking about? So I was just trying to plain talk it a little bit, but.
Yep. And
I laud that effort.
Yeah.
I think everything we can do to help make this clearer to regular people is good.
And then your other change was that we changed the definition of immediate family member in the Code of Ethics. And that only applies to this section because that is the only section in the whole code that it is mentioned even.
Correct. Right.
And that's the best way to do it then. Okay, so I understand that.
Yeah.
And narrowing that for this remote interest is appropriate. You would not want to narrow it, of course, in the entire city code.
Right.
Right. Because that would narrow it in situations where it could compromise the integrity of the government.
Right,
so.
And we didn't, with things that we know nothing about. But if we write it this way, it only applies here. It's not imported through to the rest of the code.
And then I was looking at number one, of course, that of a city officer or employee, cross out the city officer.
Right.
So or,
I wrote that twice.
And then also we're missing, correct me if I'm wrong, an immediate family member of the city officer or employee who is, is my grammar messed up?
A remote interest will apply only if the city officer or employee or an immediate family member of the city officer or employee, so either of those people, is a non-salaried officer of the non-profit corporation, which is the contracting party.
But it doesn't say if on the first sentence.
Up
it just
above,
says
up above.
Well,
okay, if, okay, yeah.
Only if.
Of course, okay. Okay, that makes sense. So the grammatical change would be to cross out the city officer or, basically.
Right.
Now, if we did propose an amendment, what would the process be? Can you educate us on
that?
What would happen?
I think if the majority of this group wanted to advance it forward, the next thing that would happen is we'd take it to a council committee.
Mm-hmm. Probably to the Government Performance and Finance Committee.
Okay.
And they'd put it on, if they were interested in hearing it, assuming that they were, they'd put it on one of their agendas. And when we did this some years ago, they asked for some representatives from the board to come and address the reasons for the proposed change, and they'd ask some questions, and then if they pass it out of their committee, then it would go to the full council to determine to amend the code, and only the full council has the legal ability to amend the code.
And I know Justin, former member, told me that there were some changes made. Are we able to get the records of what changes were made back then, possibly? And then kind of the reason why I'm asking, you know, I don't know if any of the other members in the next 6 months or so are going to have other proposed changes, and it may be a better idea if, you know, we have something that's not a really immediate concern, if we want to take a good look at the code and clarify anything, maybe bring those all to them at once.
Well, it was rewritten 2011, March 8, 2011, and it was a pretty good scrubbing. Justin is correct that it took a long time. The board ended up going through it pretty much line by line, and that's where some attempts were made to streamline a new code section, a new prohibition, the one that we have as 030F, continuing financial interest, that came about as of that.
Okay.
The complaint process that we have now, the way that you know, it's very clearly delineated and how complaints are heard before the Board of Ethics, that was added, that was cleaned up and clarified. The section on prohibition of acceptance of gifts, that was streamlined and simplified to be where it is now, to say that to take out the dollar amounts. Some codes have dollar amounts, and our old one said, you know, anything up to $50, you're home free. And the board at that time took that out and said, it's not, you know, it shouldn't turn on that. We don't want to get around splitting hairs. Did my dinner cost $51 or $49? Really, it's no, unless, you know, the thing that you're taking is of such marginal value that nobody could be presumed to legitimately believe that it would influence your behavior. So my recollection is that's probably where immediate family was used before, like I was saying earlier, because I think it was really kind of complicated and tortured and
okay.
Yeah,
sounds like a process.
Those are some that
it
I can remember.
That
I can remember off the top of my head. But we can certainly find the version that was in place as
right
of,
before.
Yeah, 2008. I'm sure we have that. We could get that for you guys.
Okay.
What I don't think that we have, because it was a repeal and reenact, because there were so many changes. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there will be a version left that shows code revising marks, because
okay.
The whole thing was taken out. And
I'd like to just, as my for my own curiosity, see the old version, if
Absolutely.
You can just email it to me.
Yeah.
And this, so we have two options here if we decide, and we haven't discussed whether or not the amendment's good or not quite yet, but if we had a little bit of discussion on it, but we could... If we did like the amendment, we could move it forward right now, or we could move it forward later. And I think either option would be fine. If people want more time to, you know, read the exact changes and think about it, that's fine. Going backwards now, do we have any discussion on whether or not this is necessary and how important it is for us to move it to that committee to consider?
I appreciate adding the whole issue of the immediate family member in. I think that makes good sense to me. And I'm feeling satisfied about the definition, given that other issues will come into play, other aspects would come into play if there was, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the language, but if we had
the third degree stuff,
yeah, that if my grandchild or
yeah.
somebody else in my of my close relationship were getting support from me in pursuing something from the city, that it would violate other issues. So,
and we'd rather not consider cases of, well, I didn't know they were on that, or you know,
right,
in this case, this defines it more narrowly, and I don't think we would have that problem. I was concerned about that, but. I didn't want to change the municipal definition of immediate family, so I think that's a good solution. So.
Right. So the way that it's written right now, spouse or domestic partner, the presumption is, unless you had a separate property agreement, the presumption would be that, because we're a community property state, that would be a financial commingling. And then the others, dependent children or other dependent relatives, I think dependent is the qualifier there. So it could be
adult son.
It could be your grandmother if your grandmother's dependent.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, I like the changes. I think it makes it a little clearer. You know, would have helped us the last time.
And then I guess Linda, one other thing that I just thought of when we were talking about just, you know, the general optics, the call out of you should recuse. when this remote interest is triggered, that is the signal that they need to recuse themselves. Mm-hmm. That's the only place in the code where anybody is called upon to recuse. That if you start with the notion that you have some sort of prohibited financial interest, but then you get into this sort of safe harbor, these, you know, four safe harbors that are the remote interest, you're home free, but you still have to meet the requirements that you surface it, uh-huh. call it out, put mm-hmm. it on the record, and don't vote on it. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, really goes to, you know, what you were talking about.
It sounds like if we voted on it, we might pass it. So if we did vote on it and did pass it, do we want to vote on it and pass it now, or do we want to talk about it at the next meeting or the meeting after? Is it something that we should move forward right now? Does it hurt?
Any controversy about it?
I mean, I don't feel like it's actually necessary, but I mean, that's fine. That's just me. But like, I just feel like, you know, just putting more stuff into the code, which just makes it longer. But that's fine. Like, you know, if you guys all think it's great, then that's fine.
Yeah, and we appreciate your opinion, so. Yeah, yeah.
I do remember that the other guy,
OM,
was not quite hot on the idea either, but, and I don't know if you want his input maybe on the next meeting or something.
Any thoughts on that?
But I'm totally fine moving forward at this point, too.
It's too bad, you know, we didn't make it, but we do have a quorum, and a majority still, even if he was here. If we didn't bend his ear enough to change his mind, so is there any more discussion on that? So your issue is that you don't think it's really necessary,
right?
It may not ever come up again,
right?
And,
I mean, I don't know if that's I don't know. I mean, I guess it's come up before, and it doesn't sound like it was a huge deal, but. You know, it could have definitely been, depending upon
I think the problem was it triggered the complaint in the first place. You know, and so we're trying to make things clear enough so that, you know, our people are wise enough to operate in such a way that there aren't any complaints.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Trying to save ourselves some more.
It did trigger some concern.
Keep them out of trouble.
Kind of what Linda was alluding to is that there should have been some signal to say, wait a minute, I can't vote on this, or I don't want to vote on this, and that isn't what happened. Ultimately, there wasn't a violation because there wasn't a finding that there was enough evidence to show that there was direct or indirect financial interest anyway. But had it, you know, overcome that, then you wouldn't have had the concern was is that it didn't fall into the remote interest either.
Right, because if they would have reported and recused, then there wouldn't have been any situation
at all.
And you can't ding people on stuff that you think should be in the law when it's not actually in there. So you got to have some kind of signal, of course. And in my opinion, it's the same thing as voting for a board, for funding for a board that you are a member of. It's the same thing, in my opinion. So that's kind of why I think it was important enough to add in the current code of ethics, and I frankly think it's the same level as that. So that's why I would say pass it. So
I would move that we go forward.
Okay.
So move it to the Government Performance and Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then we moved and seconded it to go forward and to clarify with that cross out that we identified earlier, and then with the change to the definition also of immediate family member and I. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, passed unanimous. Did you vote aye too?
I did not vote either way.
Okay. And abstain. We're allowed to do that. Abstain.
So,
there you go.
So if you don't say anything, it's an aye.
Oh, okay.
So do you want to abstain?
Yeah.
You can vote no.
Is he allowed to abstain?
Sure.
Okay.
Abstain. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, the motion has passed. And we will move on to other business. And I would also encourage any members, if I think the code is written really well. I think it's written well, and we don't have a lot of work often because of that, and that's a really good thing. But if anyone has any other changes, always feel free to bring them before this board.
So did you want me to try and get on at the soonest Government Performance and Finance Committee, or did you want to wait and for any other changes?
When is the next committee meeting?
It'll be a while because they're going through the budget, so
okay.
It'll probably
be after the first of the year.
Yeah, right? I'm thinking after the first of the year as well. So.
Okay. Could I get back to you on that in
sure.
a week or two?
Sure.
Since it's not time sensitive, so
sure.
Probably the next meeting would be fine.
The next available meeting that they have. Okay.
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that in a week or so if it's my decision to kind of get it on the next meeting, but most likely that's what we'll do.
Well, we'll have to look at their work schedule, and I know that they're pretty, only because my staff, staffs them, so I know that they've got a lot of stuff on their plate right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so on to our next item of business, number 4, review of the draft informational packet. So Linda, thank you for bringing this up, and thank you to our staff members for drafting this. Mm-hmm. I just got it today, and I kind of read it before I drove over here, so I haven't had a really thorough chance to read it, but what I skimmed through, it all seemed like good information, and one of the reasons why we're considering doing this is because some of the members felt like there was some unclarity in our communication to people who file ethics complaints, and we want to give them information in a way that allows them to be effective in identifying a specific complaint and bringing it before us in a way that we could consider it. And this will give people good information. I think it's a great idea, and it doesn't hurt to have a pamphlet to hand to folks that is really thorough and specific. So,
it probably, when we started looking into it, it probably won't be a pamphlet because we've really gotten away from handing out pieces of paper to people. It would probably be something that would be online, and if you're, because most of these complaints are filed online now, so
yeah.
It would
mm-hmm.
link to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could have some, if somebody came in to customer service or came into the clerk's office, one could certainly be printed and provided to them, but
yes.
I mean, we're not set up to have stacks of brochures everywhere.
Sure,
anymore.
But
I think
at least having it connected to the complaint form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that if someone comes in that they get both, if they ask for both, if
mm-hmm.
they can't do it.
We can definitely put it online. That's usually how a complaint will come in,
mm-hmm.
is through online or
mm-hmm.
Very rarely do they come in and with a printed complaint. So we can certainly put it with the complaint form.
And what would happen if somebody mailed a complaint in and just had a return mailing address? Then you would mail back information?
Sure.
Is that how it works?
Sure.
And then basically you would include this in there. And then most people that complain or file a complaint, would get a link to this one pager, or they would get an attachment in an email.
So I,
that
when
would
we file in a complaint, I acknowledge that complaint.
Mm-hmm.
I send it in and say, today we received your complaint. If it's they've only given me an address, then I do it through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
If they've given me an email, if they've given me a phone number, I reach out to that person and say, what's the best way to contact you? I received your complaint. Do you have any questions? I give them all the website information. And so I'm in contact with that.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, that person probably the whole way through.
And that's a required step already. If it's a complaint
yeah.
against
mm-hmm.
The covered official that's under your jurisdiction, the first step in the process is that the complaint is taken in, it's acknowledged, and
mm-hmm.
receipt is acknowledged. So at that point, if they didn't already have this, it could be sent back out to them. And just to let you know, we put this together. Doris is a staff person who works in the clerk's office. Amanda took the first crack at it. She did a great job. She asked me and Doris to, kind of look at it, too.
Yeah.
So we added some pieces in. And it's basically trying to, explain the process. But I'm sure if we took several steps back and worked on it more, it could be even more plain talk, normal speak. So I would encourage, you know, you all to take a look at it, and if it still sounds wonky, or, you know, if you think it would be a way to better advise people with, you know, sometimes you see questions like, what, you know, what can I expect, or what will happen next? And we could certainly, mm-hmm. you know, keep working on it to have it get to that level where its intent is to accurately, but, you know, but inform people in a way that is accessible and understandable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is my thought. It's really thorough. It's small print, and it is a little bit wordy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it could be simplified. It would take some work. And I think we should all take this, appreciate
like
the work that happened. And
yeah.
And is there anyone maybe that could take the lead on working on it? Linda, would you be willing to give it a read and maybe...
Sure.
And what would be the rules of us collaborating on it? We couldn't email back and forth on it for the Public Meetings Act.
No, not really.
Of course, okay.
Yeah.
You were saying two? Can two could... You could meet with two...
Okay.
Three, we can't
do
three. Three would be a quorum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Linda and I could email back and forth about this, right?
Yeah. If you email, as long as it's just two of you, make sure that you know, kind of you save the emails until you don't need them anymore.
Put it in my file.
Yes, exactly.
File.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be fine. And we can probably get you a... This is... she ended up putting this in Publisher to make it look pretty like that, but we can certainly get you the content in a Word file.
Okay, yes. So we started out with... We tried to create a pamphlet, and...
Okay, good.
Oh, boy.
I can appreciate that. I was just thinking, starting off with even the title, Ethics Violation, sort of suggests that there... That though the person may believe there's a
mm-hmm.
violation, whether we might want to just say... Complaint
process.
Yeah,
and that's what she had down below here. So
yeah,
you can
I saw that.
But
I was just thinking, because that sort of suggests that the person that there's
I would say what we've done so far is I'm reasonably comfortable that it's an accurate recitation of the law.
Okay,
so.
That's a helpful thing.
So
then it's an organizational
exactly.
Great,
and,
sure.
And as well as you know the plain speak, plain talk. You know, however.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can send you the word. I'll send you the word.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And we can...
Yep. And I was going to mention, too, so I...
I'm right near Ruston, so...
Okay.
We can meet at the Antique Sandwich Company.
And I mentioned that I'm willing to maybe work with you a little bit on it, but is there anyone else that wants to work with Linda on it, or would it be good if her and I just worked on it?
That's fine.
Speak now or forever hold your
peace. No, we'll collaborate on something.
It'd be cool to, you know, it'd be good to have a cup of coffee and talk about it. And so we'll get together on that. We have some time before our next regular meeting, and maybe we could have that agenda item at our next meeting. That would be good to have something finished by then. So is there any other points or business any members want to bring up before we adjourn?
We had talked a little bit about maybe doing some research into best practices with other cities. So I don't know if you had any opportunity.
I have.
Did you
get?
I looked at
something I've been meaning to do on my own.
Other cities' ethics codes, and I can tell you that they're kind of all over the map. So
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but we haven't pulled together anything in particular. Is there something,
part of it was sort of thinking about how, since the whole thing about the executive session and that whole newspaper issue that was brought up about the Lakewood Ethics Board.
Oh, yeah, that was Pierce County, yeah.
Yeah. And or Pierce County, and then you know
they've already
changed.
They already changed it. The county council voted to they dialed all that back. There's no more secret meeting. I mean, they can do the closed session that's lab by lab, but there's no more confidentiality over the complaint. There's no more top secret. You know, no names. They got rid of that.
I'd really love to know. You know, a variety of places and how they're doing it, mm-hmm. so that. You know, we could look at ourselves before we're, before we are in another hot situation.
Yeah.
And,
no, my sense is that Pierce County was an outlier as to all of that, and we're probably you know, on the more open and transparent side, we've never had any argument that if somebody said it was a complaint filed, we hand it out. You know, the only thing that is in closed session is your deliberations, and the purpose of that is to allow a free flowing discussion when you're in your decision making mode. So that, mm-hmm. but you know, it just because I think people make better decisions in that when they feel more comfortable speaking. But yeah. Again, you know, it's not a requirement. If you wanted to conduct those deliberations in the open, you could.
Yeah, just, and that is state law that allows us to do that. And I think part of the issue with when we had the audience, it took a lot of us off guard. And we, as a group, could have handled that in a little bit of a different way by giving a better explanation.
How we got to our decision.
Yeah, and I think that we could have done that in a better way. And in the future, we'll learn from our past experiences and be able to do something a little different then. But I think as far as looking at other cities, I think that's a great idea. I know one city that I think their ethics laws, and I don't think I want to get us involved in it, but Seattle, they have some jurisdiction over campaigns and over what candidates do if they're, but, you know, we have the Public Disclosure Commission for the state that mm-hmm. oversees that. And I don't think we want to get involved in that, but it would be interesting to read their code and kind of maybe even meet with one of their members and see how they conduct their business.
You know, even if it only confirms that, since, you know, what we do is, what our practice is one that we feel more comfortable with, it would be helpful. And since 3 out of the 5 of us are new, you know, we don't have the benefit of your experience in this. I would certainly appreciate just getting a broader sense of how cities conduct. So
mm-hmm.
there's
I'm happy
we're happy to put something we can put something together to, you know, sort of start your discussion. But I will say, if you're interested on your own, the website for the Municipal Research and Services Center, MRSC, it's like a think tank for local governments.
Mm-hmm.
Municipal
MRSC.
MRSC.
Research
and Services Center, Municipal Research Services Center. It's, you know, all publicly available. They do analysis, give all kinds of opinions. There's a section on there, I just happened to look at it today, that talks about codes of ethics and gives you some examples of other cities that do it. And mm-hmm. So
great.
That's a good place to start, just to take a look. It's a good resource.
Okay, and then you're going to make the change on the past minutes and then mail those to me?
Yeah,
okay.
I'll make that change and then I'll mail it to you for a signature.
Okay.
And did our change to the form, the click on?
Oh, yes. I did.
I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay,
I did that right away. Okay. And I renamed it for just a little bit of clarity when I went out there and I said, oh. And so, you know, because I can't remember now what it was named, but yes, I did change that, and it goes. The other thing is, when you click on the complaint, it does go to 311, and so that is it bothers me a little bit. But I think our organization wants one complaint form, and so, mm-hmm. and you go down and you click that this is a code of ethics uh-huh. complaint. Uh-huh. But it does, I was going to check to see if there's something we can do. It does sort of startle you a little bit when you click on the form and it goes, and then 311 comes up. Because you're,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you have to set up an account.
Yeah,
and you have to set up an account. Yeah. And, and yeah, so.
Yeah, it has Falderall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I was going to sort of try and see if I can do anything about that, but I'm.
Can you do an anonymous complaint?
Yeah,
you can.
Even with setting up an account?
Well, they don't. I mean, yeah, they're linked together, but you can't. You can file a complaint anonymously, but
you have to come in with a paper bag over your.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, like the only way that
you can mail it.
Occasionally, we get an anonymous one. The one that we were just talking about, the council member with the. Spouse mm-hmm. on the board that came in
mm-hmm.
on a piece of paper in an envelope with no return address, and we processed it.
I don't remember that. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So, yes, you can file an anonymous complaint, but, you know.
You got to work to do it.
Yeah.
Got to know how to use the mail system.
Yeah, I guess so. And we do get things from time to time. I mean, things come in as email. And the reason that it's all directed back to the 311 system is because we want to make sure that, you know, people have a place to make themselves heard, that we don't overlook things. Because, you know, if I send an email to somebody deep in the organization and said, right. you know, I can't believe Doris did that, I saw her out doing this, that person may or may not, you know, they might not do anything
know
about
that
it.
It's
no,
an effort.
They might not have any idea.
Or
so.
They should process it, or they should move it forward, or
yeah.
they should, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the 311 system, it, you know, it's, it creates workflows and, you know, manages the information and gets things to where they need to get.
Mm-hmm. And it's working well. It's just
yeah.
a little bit of a...
It's a, yeah.
It, when it comes up, and when you're... Because I imagine as a person who wants to file the Code of Ethics complaint, when you click on it, you expect to see a complaint form Code of
right.
Ethics, you know, and what comes up is the 311. So... but on the side, or if you scroll down, there's a place where you check Code of Ethics
mm-hmm.
or Ethics Violations.
And that's why we put that in the instructions, that people would know to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That didn't seem so bad to me. I mean, it could be improved, but I don't think it's prohibiting anyone from filing an ethics complaint. But if our members want to review that
mm-hmm.
and come back with any thoughts on that, then that's could be something.
Maybe like having on that when you... Before you click the button to file a complaint, having like a picture of the 311 website with a little
with
red square around where
code of ethics.
Yeah, around where you're supposed to click.
Yeah, that would be.
I mean, that would make it clear and obvious. After clicking that, you're going to get to this page. And
every
yeah.
one of us gets onto somebody's web page where you look and your eyes cross and you still can't
mm-hmm.
find the part that you want there.
It's all about all because there's so much information
yeah.
out there.
Okay, are there any other topics that anybody wants to bring up? All right, the time is, 7:30?
7:30.
We are adjourned. Thank you all for coming this evening.